Hello and welcome to another episode of the Men with the Golden Tongues. I am your host, Micah, joined by my co-host, Brad.
Hello.
And special guest this week, James.
Hey, guys.
Now, James, you have a very big responsibility because this is the first time we're doing this with special guests that we just solicit. And this is it. If you fail...
There can never be another one.
Oh, yeah. Glad to get that responsibility. Hopefully I don't drop the ball like the Panthers did and the Seahawks did, I guess, since they failed to win today.
All right. Well, guys, I got to tell you, this movie, let's just jump into it. This movie is the best James Bond movie.
Yes, it is. I wholeheartedly agree. So you know what this reminds me of, Micah and James? This reminds me of, so like Assassin's Creed came out, right? And Assassin's Creed was a competent game.
Yes.
It was fine. Like it had some rough edges, but you know, good enough to deserve a sequel, all that jazz. Assassin's Creed 2, they literally took every flaw from the first game and completely fixed it. And Assassin's Creed 2, some would argue, still either the best or like top two in the Assassin's Creed series. That's what I feel like From Russia with Love is with James Bond.
I agree. It's it does everything right. And this is the movie that every other spy movie, be it a serious one or a spoof of some sort, this is the movie that they are aping from, you know? Like it's such a great movie, and it is. There's one thing that I don't like about this movie, and that's the Bond girl. I'm not a huge fan of Tatiana because she's a bit of a wimp and a mousy girl. I don't really like that.
Well, we know you didn't like her since you didn't call her Tanya. So,
so yes, yeah. All right. Good. I'm glad we're all in agreement. Look, everybody, like Thunderball. Goldfinger gets all the love, right? Because it was the breakout. But From Russia with Love, that's the best James Bond movie. Period.
So, the only thing it didn't get right, in my opinion, that the later Bond movies do is having the theme song in the opening credits. It just has like the regular James Bond music instead of the From Russia with Love song right in the opening credits.
Right.
See, I like that choice, though, because I think the theme song from this movie is actually the weakest part. Like, the actual, like, From Russia with Love theme is pretty horrendous. Like, you'll hear it at the end of the podcast, everybody listening. I'm just not a big fan of that song. I actually like the kind of remix on the James Bond theme that they do at the beginning of this one.
Really? You don't like that guy crooning From Russia with Love?
No, it sounds like a really generic song. You know what I mean? Like it's like most of the Bond themes, like sound special. Even whether they're good or not, they still sound special. This seems like any old singer, you know, could have penned this song in the early '60s and just slapped it out there.
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I'm a big fan of it though. I really like it. I was here singing it to my wife, and she's like, "What are you? What we're not going to Russia? What?" But I dig the song. It's not my favorite, and it's certainly not the best. But as Bond songs go, I think it's pretty good.
Now, do you guys know one of the biggest reasons why this was chosen to be the second film in the franchise?
Is this the JFK?
This is the JFK fact? One. Yeah.
All right.
So, Micah, did you know this, that one of the reasons they chose, because John F. Kennedy, while he was president, actually listed this as one of his five favorite books.
Oh, really?
Yes, they wanted to capitalize on the popularity of that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And I believe it's the last movie he ever saw before going to Dallas.
Yeah, I believe that's true as well.
Oh, damn. Oh, damn. Well, look, if you gotta go, look. If there's one movie that you can see, if there's only one movie left in the world that you can see, this ain't a bad one.
And for all we know, Lee Harvey Oswald could have been a Spectre agent. We have no clue.
Anything's possible, man. Anything's possible.
He's either him or that other guy, right?
Right. Right. This is the second gunman.
That invisible man on the grassy knoll. All right, so let's get into it. The movie opens up at night. We see Sean Connery as James Bond sneaking through a hedge maze, being stalked by Donald Red Grant, played by
Robert Shaw.
Robert Shaw.
Thank you.
It's Quinn.
Yes. Thank you. Grant eventually gets the jump on him, and he chokes him out with a what do you call that thing? A garrote?
A garrote.
I don't know about killing people, guys. I see you guys answered really quickly, though.
Hey, I've been looking for that watch on Amazon now. I kind of need that.
So he chokes him out. Now, all of a sudden, lights come up, and it's revealed that this guy isn't James Bond. He's just some poor schmo wearing a Bond mask who had to die in this training exercise. That guy's dead, right?
Yeah, only the strongest survive Spectre, man.
Wow.
That's how they weed out the shit candidates out of their ranks.
Could you imagine going into work one day and it's just like, here, put this mask on. You can barely see and you probably can't breathe well. And it's night. We're going to take this highly trained assassin and have him stalk you.
So one of the best parts about the scene, too, is when they originally filmed the scene, they actually had an actor that was like a Sean Connery, like really looked really similar to him. And then they took the mask off and it looked like the same guy almost. So like they literally had to change actors to get the guy with the mustache just that people would understand that it's not Sean Connery pulling off a Sean Connery mask. Like it's actually like a different dude. That's not James Bond.
Yeah, I don't know if the people in the 60s audience would be able to wait, what? What is it? Is it James Bond? Why did he pull his skin off? Is he a snake? Did he just shed his face? So we get the opening scene. And the opening credits. And as opening credits go, not my favorite.
So this was not Maurice Binder, by the way. This and Goldfinger were not Maurice Binder. These titles were designed by a guy named Robert Brownjohn, who did this whole, you know, he did kind of the same thing in Goldfinger where he, you know, projects the credits onto different, you know, scenery. In this case, it's a belly dancer who's dancing. Binder would pick it up back in Thunderball and give the, I guess what you'd call the traditional Bond credit sequence going forward from there.
Yeah, this is, this is annoying. this is some woman standing in front of a projector. Like, get out of the way. Down
don't
in front.
Don't they do the same thing with Goldfinger? Isn't that a lot of projected on a woman as well?
Yeah,
I'm not a fan of that either.
Well, and in Goldfinger, they even take it a step further. They actually project the weirdest thing. And we'll talk about it, you know, when we get to the Goldfinger episode. They actually project scenes from the movie during the opening credits.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. So this, they're just projecting the names of the different, you know, credit people.
Right, right. But all in all, not my favorite. Like I said, they don't really get good for me until Thunderball, which I can't wait to do that movie because I got a lot of things with that movie.
I'm in the same boat as you.
So after the credit scene, the movie cuts to a couple guys playing chess. One of the men is secretly contacted and he's summoned.
Well, hang on. Not just playing chess, but playing chess in like the most grandiose chess ballroom that you've ever seen in your entire life. This was the signature set piece from this film, right up front.
This is the ESPN2 presents the World Chess Championships. 'Cause look at the chandelier. Look at these gigantic chess pieces. And they have the clock there. Like, I thought, I mean, I know you have the clock in chess, but they're moving real slow, taking these pieces and then hitting this clock. I just, when I've seen competitive chess, like, they're moving, man. They're moving like pulp. Pulp can move, baby.
Dramatic effect.
I guess so. And there's a lot of people watching this, too. Goodness gracious. Could you imagine? Your life is so like, oh, man, I can't wait to go see these guys play chess.
I also like how he gets the note slipped to him from Spectre, you know, like basically saying, you know, you're needed at once. And he's just like, all right, I'll just win this in one move then so I can get the fuck out of here to go talk to number one on his boat.
I wanted to see what happened when the guy playing Kronstein surrenders and like knocks his king over. If the butler over there with the big metal stick just like throws the king across the room or what.
Oh, that's funny. So yeah, he's summoned and he comes to a boat, and we find out that the man's name is Kronstein. And he is meeting with Spectre number one and Rosa Klebb. So Kronstein is like Spectre's like expert planner, as denoted by him playing chess, because that's what that means, right? Like, you play chess, all of a sudden you're a master tactician. And he has devised a plan to steal a Lector. The Lector is a cryptography device. And if you have one of those, you can, you know, if you're intercepting encrypted messages, you can, you know, you can use that machine to figure out what they mean. So think about it this way. When you were young, back in the 80s, playing Tecmo Bowl, if you got a peek at the play that your opponent picked and you picked that play, instant blitz, right?
Of course.
That's what this thing is. That's what this thing has the capability of being. It has the capability of being your way of cheating in Tecmo Bowl. So the contact man wins the match. He goes out, he meets number one and Rosa Klebb.
So the thing with Klebb is that she is a Russian defector. She was a high-ranking official in Smursh. She apparently just defected to join Spectre. But the Russians haven't made that public yet. So anyone else that isn't, you know, high in the chain of command would still think that she works for Smursh, which is kind of a key part of this plan as well.
Right.
I wonder what she brought to Spectre if she can defect and no longer be a part of the of Smursh and the Russian structure, that it vaults are all the way up to number three.
well, the one thing we don't know, where did Dr. No rank on the Spectre chain? Like, we have no idea.
I mean, we have three of the top five here. We're missing two and four.
And we know number two comes later.
Yeah.
We can assume that Largo is number two right now. So yeah, I have no idea where Dr. No sat on the Spectre ranking ladder. Was he like a special Spectre consultant? Like did he get a number? I can't imagine him going to like the meeting room that they had in Thunderball with his, you know, penguin hands doing stuff normally.
I love the idea of Dr. No just being a contractor.
Somebody call that crazy guy in Jamaica.
Right. Get that crazy guy in Jamaica, put him on a 6-month contract. We'll see how he does. And if he could stay alive, then we'll hire him on.
So Kronstein has this amazingly detailed plan on how Spectre is not only going to acquire the Lector, but he also is specifically going to make sure that he uses a plan that makes the English use James Bond to get on the assignment.
Come in, Kronstein. Sit down, number three, while we listen to what number five has devised for us.
I hope Kronstein's efforts as director of planning will continue to be as successful as his chess.
They will be. According to your instructions, I've planned for Spectre to steal from the Russians their new Lector decoding machine. For this, we need the services of a female member of the Russian cryptograph section in Turkey and the help of the British Secret Service. Naturally, neither the Russians nor the British will be aware that they are now working for us.
Number three, is your section ready to carry out Kronstein's directives?
Yes, number one. The operation will be organized according to Kronstein's plan. I have selected a suitable girl from the Russian consulate in Istanbul. She's capable, cooperative, and her loyalty to the state is beyond question.
And you're absolutely sure she believes you're still head of operations for Soviet intelligence?
It is most unlikely she would know I'm now working for Spectre. Moscow has kept my defection secret from everyone but a few members of the Presidium.
For your sake, I hope so. Kronstein, you are sure this plan is foolproof?
Yes, it is. Because I have anticipated every possible variation of countermove.
But what makes you think that M, the head of British intelligence, will oblige you by falling in with your plan?
For the simple reason that this is so obviously a trap. My reading of the British mentality is that they always treat a trap as a challenge. And in any case, they couldn't possibly pass up even the slightest chance of getting their hands on the electrodecoder. They have wanted one for years.
Mm-hmm. All that you say could be true. What else?
As an added refinement, I think that Spectre will probably have the chance of a personal revenge for the killing of our operative, Dr. No. Because the man the British will almost certainly use on a mission of this sort would be their agent, James Bond.
Let his death be a particularly unpleasant and humiliating one.
How could he possibly know?
He's an expert planner, man. He planned for that. he planned for that when he was taking the other dude's king. He was like, oh, pff, this is easy. I beat this guy in chess. Of course he's going to. Of course they're going to use James Bond to do it. Not any of the other 00s. No, no. Just James Bond. So number one puts number three, Rosa Klebb, in charge of the mission. And Rosa recruits Grant as an assassin. Now she's going and she goes to this training facility. And so, on Spectre
first of all,
Island.
This is quite well, yeah, Spectre Island first.
Like, where's that on the map?
This is quite an intricate school that they have going on here.
Yeah, like they just have a school for training bad guys, man. Like they and in a wide variety of things, like board breaking and shooting
dodging
cardboard.
A flamethrower.
Right.
And apparently running around a hedge maze with a James Bond mask on. That's advanced spectering.
Oh my goodness.
That particular class. So you guys, so there's a character that basically the dude that's like the head of Spectre Island. His name's Morzeny. Do you guys recognize him at all?
He looks very familiar.
I don't.
Okay. So he's played by a gentleman who's named Walter Gotell. Mm-hmm. Walter Gotell would appear in many Bond films in the future as General Gogol.
Oh, really?
The Russian KGB head, yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so starting in, I think it was The Spy Who Loved Me is his first one, and he would do, I think, 7 films total, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow. Goodness gracious.
So, but Micah probably blanked most of them out of his memory because they most of them had Roger Moore as James Bond.
Let me tell you something, man. This movie is so good. Like, I can't. Like, this movie was it, right? Like, after this, then they start to get a little silly, right? And they start with, like, the names of the women, and then they just get. And then the Roger Moore era is just entirely ridiculous. And then they realize it's so ridiculous that they get super angsty Tim Dalton to come in, and they go 180 degrees in the opposite direction. And then they're like, we don't know what we're doing. We're going to take a break for a couple of years. Like, it's this series, while I love it so much, it just it trips me out, man. It really does. So one of the tests that Rosa Klebb does to make sure that Grant is her man is she puts on brass knuckles and takes this shirtless bastard and punches him right in the gut.
Like sucker punches him in the gut.
Yeah, man. Like, what? Could you imagine? Now, he took it like a champ, right? Took it like a champ. But, nah, man.
Yeah, nothing like a cracked rib or something to help you on your mission.
I'd like to see the reaction, like, after they walk away. Like, he's just like, oh, my God. like he's doing all he could to hold it together while they were in front of him, and then he reacts after the fact.
I wonder if he got to go back to the masseuse and, like, I got a new area for you to focus on.
Might be why he was pissed. Maybe that masseuse was going to be a, you know, happy ending at the end of the massage.
Yeah.
That got interrupted now because I just got punched in the stomach.
Yeah, you can't, yeah. Mm-mm. And what if that was, like, take 11? Like, what if there was some dick on set who was just, like, who just sneezes right after she punches him in the gut? It's like, all right, wait a minute. Jimmy sneezed again. We gotta do this again. Oh, my goodness gracious. Can't imagine, man. So we, after she gut punches the dude, we cut to Istanbul where we meet Tatiana Romanova. She is a cipher clerk at the Soviet consulate in Istanbul. She is recruited by Kleb as an unwitting pawn, as she thinks that Kleb is still working for Schmersh.
You know who I am? Colonel Kleb, head of operations for Schmersh. I saw you once in Moscow when I worked for the English decoding crew. Did you tell anyone at the consulate you were coming here? No, the message said I know. I sent it. Your work record is excellent. The state is proud of you. Thank you, Comrade Colonel. Take off your jacket. Turn around. You're a fine-looking girl. Sit down. I see you trained for the ballet. But I grew an inch over the regulation height, and so? And then you have had the three lovers. What is the purpose of such an intimate question? You are not here to ask questions! You forget to whom you're speaking! I was in love. And if you were not in love? I suppose that would depend on the man. Sensible answer. This man, for instance. I cannot tell. Perhaps if he was kind and kulturni. Corporal, I have selected you for a most important assignment. Its purpose is to give false information to the enemy. If you complete it successfully, you will be promoted. From now on, you will do anything he says. And if I refuse? Then you will not leave this room alive. I will obey your orders. Good. Now these are your instructions. You report to me here. Yes. But the consulate security man must not know that I'm in Istanbul. This is classified far above his level. I will say nothing to anyone. If you do, you will be shot. Come, my dear. You are very fortunate to have been chosen for such a simple, delightful duty. A real labor of love.
By the way, Spectre, it's a really cool name, right? MI6, really cool name. Schmersh, not so much.
No, not at all.
I don't want to work for an organization whose acronym spells Schmersh. Like, it just sounds, it sounds rapey. I don't know.
You kind of get that vibe with Kleb and Tatiana during their little interaction.
Yeah, in this scene, man. Goodness gracious. She's
well, so just so you guys know, they actually had to tone this scene down quite a bit from how it was in the book.
Oh, really?
Yeah, oh yeah. No, like this one, like, there's definitely some, you know, lesbian overtones in the scene. But if you weren't paying attention, you might not catch him. Like, apparently the scene in the book was gross.
Yeah, man. Like, she's like, all right, because essentially Tatiana is being used as a honeypot, right? Like, that's her role in this. But I guess Rosa's like, Rosa with these Coke bottle glasses is like, I got to check out the goods. Got to get a taste of this honeypot. It's kind of rapey, man. It's kind of rapey.
I also love how she, like she's like, hey, you have a choice. And she's like, what happens if I don't want to do this? She's like, well, then I'm not going to let you leave the room and you're going to kill you. thanks for that option.
You can be my prostitute or you can die.
It's all for Mother Russia.
Oh, goodness gracious. So, yeah, she recruits Tatiana. Now, we cut to our hero, James Bond, doing what James Bond does, and he's just macking on some chick.
Same chick from Dr. No.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And she's complaining because Moneypenny calls him and Moneypenny's like, you got to get to London. And she's doing that thing that women from the 60s apparently do, where it's like she starts grabbing the phone. He can't come. He has to fuck me. And he can't go to work because I'm looking for this. I want some of this. This sexy by 1960s standards man.
Well, she said it was 6 months since the last time she saw him, right? So she's been waiting.
She's been waiting 6 months. It's the 60s, man. Like, aren't they known for free love? And no one's being loyal
for that.
It's
the early 60s.
Ah.
We're not in the Austin Powers era 60s yet.
Ah, okay. So in London, M tells Bond that Romanova has contacted their station T in Turkey, offering to defect with a Lecter, which MI6 and the CIA have been after for years. But she says she will only defect to James Bond, whose photo she has allegedly found in a Soviet intelligence file. They obviously know that this is a trap, right? Because, I mean, that sounds, it not only does it sound like a trap, it sounds like a stupid trap, right?
Well, that was part of Kronstein's analysis. He's like, they're going to think it's a trap, but the British are so arrogant that they're still going to try to do it anyway.
So here in this scene, we get the first of many appearances of Desmond Llewellyn as Major Boothroyd, a.k.a. Q. And what do we all think of Desmond Llewellyn? I mean, we all love Desmond Llewellyn, but
of course,
is there any specific Desmond Llewellyn role in any specific movie that you really care for?
Well, my favorite scene, I think, with Desmond Llewellyn was probably in Tomorrow Never Dies, where he's when Bond flies into Germany, and he's at the airport undercover as an Avis rental agent, basically. And he has like the checklist of all the services that Bond will need. And he's like, he's like, do you need collision? And Bond's like, oh, of course. and he's like, how about, comprehensive? He's like, oh, definitely. He's like, personal injury. He's like, well, he's like, hopefully not, but mistakes do happen. And of course, like, they frequently do with you. You jerk.
Desmond Llewellyn is a perfect foil for anyone that was playing James Bond. He was great, and his last movie, what was his last movie?
World is Not Enough.
While I'm not a huge fan of that movie, he had a great send off in that movie. Unknowingly, like, they didn't know he was going to pass on after that movie, but I thought it was great.
What about you, James?
I'm not sure if I really have a favorite. I actually quite like the scene in the movie here. I'm quite confused, though, when he's showing Bond how to close it and reopen the case properly so you don't get the tear gas canister. If Bond is really excited or confused that he was able to do it properly, or if he's just like, I'm not an idiot. I think I can remember to rotate the things and open.
See, I see. For me, like, this scene, like, so in Goldfinger, he goes full Q. Like Goldfinger's the first time that you see, like, you know, him treat Bond with disdain, you know, about using his gadgets and stuff like that. This one, he's just the guy bringing the briefcase and, you know, very, very matter of factly explaining how it works. To me, Bond is like, kind of, like, not overwhelmed, but he's like, oh, what a cool little trick this is. Like, so that when he's like, oh, I think I got it, like, he's like, oh, that's kind of cool that I have this briefcase here.
I guess I don't know for sure. Like, do we ever get a idea of, like, how long Bond has been in with them? Like, how long he's been an agent, or like, how often has he interacted with Q up to this point? Because as he goes on, they keep repeating, keep interacting in every movie.
Mm. No, I think they didn't catch on to that, because I think Guy Hamilton, who directed Goldfinger, was the one who suggested to Desmond Llewellyn to be like this, like this guy takes your gadgets and fucks them up, never brings them back in working order. Like, you should hate this guy. Like this guy makes your life a living hell all the time. So that, like, that's why that's the first one with that. I think in this one, it's a similar scene to me from Dr. No, when he just, you know, he brings in the Beretta and it's like, here's your new gun. Here's what it does. I'm just the quartermaster. I'm just, you know, giving you your stuff. I don't feel like a relationship between the two of them in this movie that I do when we get to Goldfinger later on.
Yeah. He's like, remember what that guy did to your briefcase? like this guy's an asshole. James Bond is a dick, guys. I don't know if I made that clear.
I actually like this gadget because it's actually, like, I can believe that this exists.
It's the most practical thing ever, right? That's ever been in a James Bond movie, right? Like, exploding pen. No one needs an exploding pen, right? Like, no one needs an invisible car, right? You can't do that. But this thing is actually, like you said, like, this seems like a real world device that is actually practical and is used in a practical way in this movie.
And we get to see every use of it throughout the film.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it gets used for all of its purposes. Like, everything that it does is important for Bond later on.
Yep. Absolutely.
The only thing about it I find interesting is the gold sovereigns. It can be used anywhere you may end up, but it seems like it'd be easier. Like, oh, you're going to Istanbul. Here's whatever money they use there, and instead of find a pawn shop or a gold broker or something and deal with this.
Bond just throwing coins at people. He doesn't even care.
Much like Ezio Auditore did in Assassin's Creed 2. Right. There you go. It all comes full circle. Yeah, those gold sovereigns. You better hope that some lunatic doesn't try to blow up the gold reserves so that only his gold costs, you know, is worth anything. So Bond is equipped with a case containing a concealed knife, gold sovereigns, as you said, tear gas, and a AR-7 collapsible, like, rifle. Bond then flies to Istanbul to meet with station head Ali Kerim Bey. 007 is followed from the airport by Bulgarians who are working for the Russians and who are in turn tailed by Grant.
So they purposefully filmed this scene very similar to how the airport scene was in Dr. No, just to try to play on your preconceived notions. Because remember, in that one, you know, Bond ends up riding away with the bad guys, so and gets followed by the good guys. He gets followed by Felix and by Quarrel. In this one, he rides away with the good guys, and the bad guys are actually tailing him. But you're supposed to not really know which is which. Like, they're trying to keep it as ambiguous as possible.
Yeah. So your subconscious is like, oh, I've seen this before. Yeah, these people are one thing, but then it turns around and it flips it on you. You're like, whoa, my God, this is amazing filmmaking. Like, who wrote this? Kronstein? Like, it's amazing. How did he know?
So, I don't know. When I was rewatching it, I was like, how did everybody get a hold of his travel itinerary? Like, I didn't realize they were following Kerim Bey's son there first, and that's why they were there. It's like, how does everybody know when he's getting into town?
Yeah, for a secret agent, this guy is very easy to track.
Well, as we'll see in future films, Bond's ability to be a secret agent is malleable depending on what they need it to be for the plot.
Yeah, no kidding, man. Like, oh, who are you? I'm James Bond. Here's my social security number and my date of birth. Like, wait, what? You're supposed to be a secret agent. Ah, never mind all that. So Bond meets with Kerim Bey. And then he's taken to his hotel room. When he's at his hotel room, he does that cool thing that you're supposed to do when you're a spy, and he goes to look for bugs. And he realizes that his room is bugged, and he's like, oh, I want another one. So he gets another one.
So let's talk about Kerim Bey real quick, because they have a brief scene. Kerim Bey is kind of the Felix Leiter of this film. He's the station chief in Turkey. I can't think of a single Bond ally, and maybe Jeffrey Wright's Felix Leiter is the only one that really comes close that I like more throughout the series than Kerim Bey.
Tanner Bay is like he just seems like a blast to hang out with. You know what I mean? Whereas some other Felixes are just like they just have sticks up their ass, man. like Karen Bay, he's about business, but he's got personality. You know what I mean? And so, this dude, is he supposed to be Turkish?
No, actually, so he's played by Pedro Armendariz, who's actually Mexican.
Yeah,
he's a famous Mexican actor.
Yeah, I'm like, wait a minute, come on now.
So you guys might not know, there's actually kind of a sad story beyond this. So while the movie was filming, Pedro Armendariz found out that he actually had like late stage terminal cancer. Ooh. During the filming the movie. So they were actually going to recast him because they're like, you need to go, you know, you need to chill, rest, you know, spend time with your family. He's like, no. He's like, I want to do this movie. I want this to be my last film. I want to stay. So they actually rescheduled all the shoots to get his scenes knocked out within 3 weeks, basically.
Oh, wow.
So they did all of that. So after he was done that, he left, left from filming, went back home in Mexico, hung out with his family some. Sadly, he actually killed himself in his hotel room rather than, you know, just wither out and die. Mm. Basically, but he never got to see the film.
Oh, man.
So kind of a sad story there. But his son would appear in a future James Bond film in a small role later on.
Oh, wow.
So we'll save that one for when we get to that movie.
Excellent, excellent. So shortly after Bond is taken to his hotel, Grant kills one of the Bulgarians after stealing a car before dumping it outside of the Soviet consulate in order to provoke them in retaliating against Karen Bay.
That shit was fucked up.
That was, man. Like, it's like this dude just rolled up and just left this car, this running car with a dead body in it. And just was like, all right, here, this is
strolls away.
This is yours. I'm out. Deuces. And then just hops in another car. Like, it's just a very funny visual. Like, it's supposed to be serious, but like here's this very big, naturally blonde haired dude who just is super sick. Like, it's a very funny image. It's a very surreal, because like, wait a minute, this guy looks like he's up to something. But I don't know. An attempt is made on Karen Bay's life via explosion.
He got. You know what saved him?
The
because his lady wanted that D.
Yeah. Yeah. She kind of was asking for it, man. She was like, Ali Karen Bay. I was like, what is she saying? And but she was, his name, Ali Karen Bay. Like, oh, she was like, come on, man. And what did he say? He said something like, all right, back to the salt mines or some shit like that. Like, wait a minute. What? I mean, this one. All right.
Bond gets a great line in here, by the way, when he comes there after the explosion happens. Because Karen Bay is like, oh, the girl, she left in hysterics. And he's like, oh, did she find your technique too violent?
There are a couple of really good lines in this movie. And again, they're not like super cheesy, or they're not like spoofs of what, you know, the Roger Moore era spoofs of like really funny lines or really good lines. Oh, it's not, I thought Christmas came once a year. Like, no, man. Like, that's not smooth, man. Anyway, he survives the explosion because of sex. So there you go, guys. Sex, answer to everyone's problems. Bond and Karen Bay end up going to spy on the Soviet consulate, where Karen Bay sees a rival agent named Krylenko. So they go to this like underground, what would you call this thing?
It's like an aqueduct, like almost.
Yeah, they go into this aqueduct, and he's like, oh, I got this little baby from your Navy, right? And then he pulls up a gigantic periscope.
that somehow like the you know, the where it's looking is inside of a Russian office inside of the consulate, and they have no clue.
They have no clue that the top end of a gigantic submarine periscope, because he said he got it from the Navy. So it's a gigantic submarine periscope. The top of it is just kind of hanging out on the floor of the Russian consulate, and no one seems to be the wiser. It's just very silly to me.
The Smirch guys just know how to focus, I guess. I don't know. And like, it's looking through like a little peephole or something. I'm like, did they cut like a mousetrap hole or something in the wall?
Right.
This thing's looking through.
Right. Like, there's got to be some major like construction work going on if no one can see this thing. But, you know, it moves because. Because Tatiana, or whatever the hell her stupid name is, she comes in and James Bond is moving it because he's looking at her ass, right? So it's like, I don't know. It's just very silly, man.
So this is supposed to be one of the famous basilica cisterns that are underneath Turkey, basically,
uh-huh.
Where it's like a big underground aqueduct. Have either of you guys played the From Russia with Love video game that came out?
I did.
About 10 years ago?
Yeah.
No.
Okay, so they remade this movie into a video game, but they definitely took some, we'll say, some artistic license with the different levels. So there's actually a level where Bond is piloting a jetpack underneath in these cisterns and fighting enemy agents as he tries to get to this periscope, basically.
Yeah, I don't think the gondola level would be fun to play.
Would be too much fun.
Are there three of them? There's what, at least three separate gondola scenes in this movie.
Yeah.
Very popular mode of transportation today.
Oh man. So Karen Bay declares it is unwise to stay in the city and takes Bond with him to a rural gypsy settlement. Now, there's a subplot in this movie, like with this scene, involving two gypsy women fighting over a dude that has absolutely nothing to do with the story. Like, I think all the men just wanted to see a couple of women in skimpy clothes just kind of duke it out.
Oh, I think this literally, like, this subplot exists merely so that Bond can bang two chicks.
Right, exactly! like, there's no reason for this to be in this movie. Absolutely not. And then he's awarded, at the end of this battle, he's awarded these two women. Like, what the fuck?
Oh. So, one of the gypsy fighters is a woman named Martine Beswick. She would actually reappear in the Bond series as Paula in Thunderball.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I gotta watch Thunderball again, man.
It was actually just on the other day. I happened to catch it while it was on TV.
Yeah, I gotta watch Thunderball. Well, I will watch Thunderball again.
Yeah, just a couple months, right?
Yeah, so. There you go. So yeah, I just found it very funny. Like, this is very 60s. Like, all right. Let's just get a couple of chicks in here to start fighting and then award them to the man later.
What happened to the guy they were fighting over? Did he die, or is he like sitting outside the tent like, what the hell is going on?
Exactly.
They never really showed who it was either. Like, they never made a big deal out of like, oh, this is the guy that's that they're fighting over here.
Yeah, because they didn't think about it, because they were like, we just need a reason to get a couple of chicks in here. I promised this chick that I had sex with that I would put her in the movie. That's my reasoning for why this scene exists. So the gypsy settlement suffers an attack from Krylenko's men who wound Karen Bay and nearly kill Bond. But Bond is secretly saved by Grant. And yeah, like we said, after the battle, as a token of appreciation for his help, the gypsy, the head of the gypsies, the chief gyp, awards Bond with a threesome with the two women that were fighting.
So I really enjoyed this gypsy battle because it's like, it's very chaotic, but it's a lot of fun because like Bond doesn't even kill a lot of dudes. Like, Bond is basically just causing mischief the entire time. like he takes two guys fighting on a table and flips the table into a lake. And, you know, he goes around, he's basically shoving people out of the way. He only kills people who are literally about to kill him.
He's taking the Royal Rumble approach. And he's just kind of hanging back and getting his pot shots where he can. And then, you know, occasionally he'll throw a dude over the top rope. But, you know, this is 60 minutes, man. You got to kind of hang in there for a minute.
Man, Krylenko also he tapped out pretty quick, man. Like it didn't like it seemed like he lost a few guys, and you know, the fight was still going. He's like, all right, let's pull out of here. Let's get out of here. Like, I thought you went to kill Cara Bay.
Right.
Like, I literally thought that was your sole purpose for coming to do this.
I like how Bond is like, oh, you're wounded. Here, let me put this Cabernet on your wound. That'll disinfect it.
Sterilize it, at least, I think.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I gotta ask the drunks that we do podcasts with. So where am I? Yes. The following night, Karen Bay tracks down Krilenku to his hideout. Bond and Karen Bay track him down. And they decide that they are going to kill Krilenku. Bond uses his collapsible rifle, puts it together, but he's like, nah, I gotta do this, man. Karen Bay says, I gotta do this, man. So broken arm or not. So he's like, all right, you only get one shot, make it count. And Karen Bay ends up, so the dude is coming out of a billboard.
Mm-hmm.
A giant billboard with a woman who has a mouth that opens up, and he comes out of the woman's mouth. And he shoots it. Like, it's just a very weird.
It's like an
image.
Escape hatch for him.
Yeah, it's basically. It's an escape hatch to the front of the building. Okay.
So no one will look for him there.
Right.
Fun little factoid. So in the book, that's actually a movie poster that has Marilyn Monroe on it. So Covey Broccoli, in some shameless self-promotion, put one of his movies on the poster for the movie.
You know what? I'm not mad at him. I'm not mad at him at all. So Bond returns home to his hotel. There he finds Romanova in bed waiting for him.
Your streak of mispronouncing names continues.
Yeah. What is her name?
Romanova.
Romanova. Roman Reigns Manova. is in bed for him. The two of them have sex, unaware that there's some couple of Spectre guys filming this sex tape in hopes to, I don't know, leak it and then have Romanova become a reality TV star. I don't know.
You look surprised. I thought you were expecting.
So you're Tatiana Romanova.
My friends call me Tanya.
Mine call me James Bond. Well, now that we've been properly introduced.
Careful. Guns upset me.
I'm sorry. I'm a bit upset myself.
You look just like your photograph.
You're one of the most beautiful girls I've ever seen.
Thank you. But I think my mouth is too big.
No, it's the right size. For me, that is.
So there's a couple of fun things in this scene. First of all, one of the goofs that most people pick up on is that Bond starts like a bath,
yeah,
but then never goes to turn the water off. so like he's like, oh, there's some chick in my bedroom, and then goes in there and they start sleeping together, but the water's running the entire time. It's going to spill out at some point. He also gets one of the most Rico Suave Bond lines in the entire series.
Yeah, man.
In the scene. Mouth line.
Yeah, the mouth
like that is now. What's better, right? Like that's a badass line. Like, oh, I got a bit. Oh, it's just right for me. It's just right for me and my dick. Like that's essentially. I don't know. Your dick, your mouth is the perfect size to wrap your lips around my dick. Get to it. It's the 60s. I can demand it.
It's got to be interesting for her because I'm sure he didn't get to take that bath after the two gypsies. So,
what does that taste? Oh my God. That reminds me of a song. So I don't know how in tune you are to the black community. A couple of years ago, there was a song by this woman who became internet famous, and the name of the song was Let Me Smell Your Dick. That's what that reminds me of now. So two have sex, Spectre's filming it. And the next day, what's her name? Tatiana. I won't butcher her name by
you can just say Tanya.
Yeah. The next day heads off for a pre-arranged rendezvous, and one of the Bulgarians who was following Bond at the airport tries to intercept her her floor plan of the consulate. So she was there to like secretly deliver this floor plan. And he tries to intercept her, but that guy is killed by Grant. Now, James finds the body. He takes the floor plans, and he brings it to Karen Bay, and they devise a plan to break into the Russian consulate and steal the lector.
There's also a scene before this where Bond meets her on a ferry, and he's basically like, so he has a like a recording device that MI6 is listening to her describe the lector just to make sure it's authentic.
Yeah.
And like the whole time she's just like, yeah, like we'll talk about this lector later, but I still want to get that D again. Like last night was fun. Let's get on this. And then like he's trying to keep her on track. So while M and a bunch of, you know, I guess high ranking spy officials are listening to this, like he starts to talk about a story. He's like, well, me and M were in China one time, and then it gets like cut off.
Yeah,
or M shoes Moneypenny out of the office. He's like, all right, get out of here real quick, because I don't want you to hear this next part. Even though I know you listen on your intercom all the time.
Oh goodness.
One of the things on the ferry that really surprised me when Bond comes upstairs to meet her, like, you see something that I didn't think existed until like the 80s or 90s with like helicopter parents, is you see a kid on a leash.
Which, like, I don't think I ever noticed that.
Oh shit. That's funny.
Now, what else you can see in the background on the ferry, there's a building in the distance, and that's actually the Maiden's Tower, which is in Istanbul. And that tower would actually be a setting in The World Is Not Enough later on.
Ugh.
Like that was Renard's tower, basically, that he holed up in.
Oh,
in Istanbul.
What a terrible movie that was. I was not a fan of that movie.
Well, it's really funny
shit,
to, like,
that is a kid on a leash. God.
Isn't it funny to look at? So like in this movie, like even though it was made 30 years before, like Istanbul, you know, looks very bright and vibrant and looks, you know, like a cool place to go. And in The World Is Not Enough, it looks like shit. like you see that in The World Is Not Enough and you're like, why the fuck would I ever go to Turkey ever?
Yeah, you're right, man. Like this place looks beautiful. Like, and yeah, I mean, to be fair, like a lot of it, what was in The World Is Not Enough looks like shit, but that's just me not being a fan of that movie. So using the plans, so they were on the ferry. She was like, oh, come on, James, give me some of that sweet, sweet loving. And everybody is, that's my Russian. And everybody is listening in. Next scene, they put the plan in action, and Bond, Karen Bay, and Tatiana they successfully steal the lector and escape on the Orient Express.
Which Grant is on, unbeknownst to them.
Yes, yes. On the train, Karen Bay quickly finds that a Soviet security guard officer named Benz has tailed them. And wishing to not let him interfere with their plans, he and Bond intercept him. I feel like I'm skipping a bunch of stuff, but it's...
No, we're pretty much where we need to be.
Okay.
There's a lot of fluff that happens on the train.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of... The one thing I'll say about this movie is that it's not lean. Like, there's a lot of, like, little things here and there that don't necessarily need to be there. They just kind of pad the running time a bit. Like, this movie could have been a very tight hour and a half, hour 35, 40.
I think a lot of the scenes that I think you're referring to is a lot of the stuff that they do between Bond and Tanya. And I think that's to give a little bit more vibrancy to their relationship, so that when, you know, what's about to happen happens when Bond gets pissed off. Like, you can, you know, you get to see that very diverse, you know, switch from where they were and where he is now. But you, yeah, you easily could have probably cut a few of the scenes on the train out to slim it up a little bit.
Yeah, either that or this, like, this character is, I'm not a fan of, I don't know if it's the character I'm not a fan of, I don't know if it's the actress who was doing the voice for the character, but there's something about this character that just seems kind of weak, like meek, and if the character were a little stronger, or a little more fleshed out, you know, not just a pawn, I don't know, maybe I'd be into it a little more. Like, she just seems to, they don't seem to have a good rapport with one another. Like, she just seems, she seems like the woman at the beginning of Coming to America, where Eddie Murphy is like, he has to marry this woman, and the woman's like, I'll do anything you want. And he's like, bark like a dog. And she starts barking. Right, hop on one foot, right. She seems like that woman to me. And I don't like that in my characters, who are just like vessels for other characters.
Well, it feels like they're building her, because, like, you know, obviously very late in the movie, she has a key decision point where she has to, you know, literally decide between love and country.
Yeah,
essentially. So I think they're trying to just build that up so that that decision has more gravity.
Yeah,
when we get to it.
Yeah.
And at least for me, I usually have a problem with actors when they're like, they're the actor who's playing a role, who their role is playing a role. Cause, you know, she's playing Tatiana, who has to play a woman who's in love with Bond, even though she's just doing it for her country. So she has to play a part. So maybe that's some of the thing where she's not good at playing a character who's playing a role.
Yeah. 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 I think you might be right. So where am I? Karen Bay, and so we're going to skip past a lot of the fluff, and Karen Bay and Benz are left alone by Bond. But Grant, who, like you said, is on the train, he kills both of them and makes it look like they killed each other, thereby preventing Bond from leaving the train with Danya. And rendezvous with one of Karen Bay's men, one of his sons. At the next station, Bond uses that, because at first I was like, why are they saying that again? But I'm like, oh, it's the spy thing they do where it's, yeah, like it's a password.
It's the code name, yeah. the secret code drop, basically.
Yeah, you know, something that isn't done in a lot of spy movies anymore.
Well, they actually... they would reference that in GoldenEye, if you recall. Like when he first, like, remember when he first meets Wade in GoldenEye, and he drops like the code phrase, Wade's like Jesus Christ, like, really, guy? Like, are you still doing this shit? Come on, man. Like, the Cold War's over. Let's move it along.
The code word, since they keep reusing the same phrase, actually causes some trouble for Bond later on.
Yes.
Yes. So at Zagreb, Grant boards the train and meets Bond, pretending to be Agent Charlie Nash from Station Y. I like to think that that's his name, Charlie Nash. And
or Kevin Nash.
Or Kevin Nash. There you go. Kevin Nash, circa that Thomas Jane Punisher movie. Wasn't he blonde,
right,
in that
he
movie?
Was a Russian.
Yeah,
he was the Russian in that movie.
He was literally the Russian.
So, eventually they all meet up and they go to dinner.
So first Nash and Bond meet in. You know, like, Bond's train car. Mm-hmm. And I like what Bond does here. Like, he actually, like, once Nash leaves to go to dinner, Bond, like, hangs back a second and, like, opens the briefcase just to make sure that, you know, because he's kind of on edge right now. I don't think Bond buys that Karen Bay and Ben's killed each other. Like, I think he knows something's up. So, like, he checks this dude's briefcase. He's like, okay, he's got the same case as me. You know, just making sure that, you know, because he's a little on edge right now. It's like, I think the hairs on the back of his neck are standing up a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, who wouldn't be? Karen Bass somehow got stabbed in the back by a guy who was tied up.
Let's see, where are we? Okay, so eventually they all go to dinner, and Kevin Nash knocks over a drink, and in the ensuing cleanup is able to drug Tatiana's drink at dinner. Afterwards, they all go back to the train
car. Bond notices it, though.
Bond eventually, yeah.
Like, she doesn't, but Bond notices.
She doesn't, because why would she be paying attention? She's just a woman, apparently. And
it's pretty easy to notice. It looks like he drops an Alka-Seltzer in there the way it bubbles. <You're right>.
So women are perceptive to bubbles, guys. That's one of the differences in the genders, apparently. So they all go back to the train car. They put a loopy Tanya to sleep, and then they do the thing that I love in movies, where both guys are pretending that they, you know, they're playing their roles, but they know what's about to happen. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, cat's out of the bag, and they just start talking. Like, this is a very gentlemanly way of, you know.
Oh, this, I love this scene.
Yeah, this is great,
about it.
This is great. This is James Bond right here for me.
Yeah. So basically, Grant knocks Bond out and disarms him while he's coming to. And then once Bond does come to, like, he gets to sit there and watch Bond, like, kind of put the pieces together. And he's, like, laughing at him the entire time, essentially, like, as he's, like, realizes, like, holy shit, like, this is a really elaborate plan that they've been fucking me with here. And Bond still thinks that Smirsch is behind it, until Grant's like, no, I don't work for Smirsch, buddy. And he's like, oh, fuck.
Right.
Fucking Spectre.
So I was wondering if we could go back a couple of scenes for a second. Sure. How do you guys feel about him smacking Tanya around a little?
Oh, yeah, that's right. So after Karen, so the scene you're referring to, after he discovers Karen Bay dead, he thinks that Tanya might have something to do with it. This is the paranoia, you know, setting in for Bond. I mean, it is 1963.
Yeah, I guess.
You know what I mean?
I mean, look, it's not cool, but, you know, like that Family Guy skit said, the 50 no's and a yes is still a yes. Like, that's the, like, that's the mentality.
Sounds awful.
That's the mentality, though, right? Like, it's completely acceptable to.
And she's also another country's intelligence agent, so right. she has to know something bad could happen, I guess, yeah. But.
I guess, but wow. Like,
maybe that's why you let her get drugged. Like, oh, this may help her forget, or she'll die, and I won't have to look at her after beating her up anymore.
Right.
Now, from Bond's, let me ask you guys this: from Bond's perspective, where he's, you know, pretty confident that she's a double agent, like, are you upset with him for doing this, or just in the context of, you know, what's socially acceptable now? Is it just gross because of that?
Well, it's look, if you're going to hit a woman, like, don't let it be out of interrogation. Like, that's what it was, right? Like, it was just like, you're a double agent. Like, tell me what you know. And she was like, I don't really know anything. I don't know anything. Tell me what you know. Even if you don't know, tell me everything you do know. Like, I don't know. It just felt kind of weird, but I get it. Right? Like, I'm not mad at it. I get it. It's like, I want the truth. Like, you're hurting me. I'll do worse than that if you don't tell me. Like, all right, bruh. Calm down.
And this isn't the last time something like this would happen. Like, Man in the Golden Gun, Roger Moore had a very similar scene
Yeah, and that was really bizarre. Like, Golden Gun is one of the few Roger Moore movies that I tolerate. And that, as goofy as that guy is, like, him hitting a woman, like, that's, what are you doing? That's not in your character. Like, don't, in the character that you have established as James Bond. Like, don't do it. I don't know. It just felt kind of weird because he was interrogating her. Like, he wasn't in any kind of danger. He was just like, tell me what you know. I don't know anything. Liar. Like, okay. No. I don't know. I don't know. It still kind of weirds me out, but I understand.
He thought he'd been betrayed, so he had to handle it.
Yeah, apparently. Good Lord.
Keep still. All right, now get up on your knees. Put your hands in your pockets. Keep them there.
Red wine with fish. Well, that should have told me something.
You may know the right wines. You're the one on your knees. How does it feel, old man?
Old man? Is that what you chaps and Smursh call each other?
Smursh?
Of course, Spectre. And it wasn't a Russian show at all. You've been playing us off against each other, haven't you? And it was Spectre who killed the Russian agent in the mosque. You?
Mm-hmm.
Karam and the other man?
Mm-hmm.
And Nash?
Oh, I don't mind talking. I get a kick out of watching the great James Bond find out what a bloody fool he's been making of himself. We're pros, Mr. Bond. We sweated your recognition code out of one of your men in Tokyo before he died. I've been keeping tabs on you. I've been your guardian angel. Saved your life at the gypsy camp.
Oh, yes. I am much obliged.
We were keeping you alive until you could get us the lector.
So you had me deliver it on a plate. That's brilliant. Go on, I'm fascinated.
Now that we've got it, you and the girl are expendable. Between here and Trieste.
The girl? Isn't she working for Spectre, too?
No. She thinks she's doing it all for Mother Russia. She takes her orders from Colonel Kleb.
A Rosa Kleb's Russian. Head of operations for Smursh.
Was. Kleb works for Spectre now. The girl doesn't know that.
Well, then why kill her?
Orders. That's only half of it, old man. Here's a roll of film. You have this in a handbag. And on you, I'll find this letter. It's from her, threatening to give the film to the press unless you marry her for helping you get the lector.
What film?
Taken in the bridal suite at your hotel. Something else the girl didn't know about. Or you.
Must be a pretty sick collection of minds to dream up a plan like that.
You see the headlines? British agent murders beautiful Russian spy, then commits suicide.
Tell me, which lunatic asylum did they get you out of?
Don't make it tougher on yourself.
So back to the Grant scene. So two amazing lines that Grant gets in on Bond here. So basically, so first, like, Bond, the way he figured, he had his doubts about Grant merely because Grant decided to drink red wine with fish. Because far be it from a gentleman to drink a red wine with fish. Doesn't he know that white is the appropriate color? If you're eating fish, red with beef, white with chicken and fish. You know, I guess you don't learn decorum on Spectre Island, Mr. Grant. But Grant gets to respond by saying, you may know the right wines, but you're the one on your knees.
Right. Oh, this whole exchange, man. Like, this is classic Bond right here, man. And look, maybe I'm a rube. Maybe I'm a prime candidate to work for Spectre. I didn't know. I didn't know you can't have a red wine with a fish, as it
you
is
also
improper.
Don't drink.
Oh yeah, I don't drink either. So maybe I'd be a perfect candidate. I just need a little old lady to punch me in the gut with a pair of brass knuckles to see if I pass the test. I would.
And then Grant also basically tells Bond that he's just going to keep shooting him but not killing him until Bond crawls on the floor and kisses his foot.
I mean, that's some bad. Because that's some badass shit, man.
Do you think the monologuing was part of the plan? They're just like, you know, just tease him a little bit, then slowly murder him.
Oh, I think that was for Grant's enjoyment specifically.
I don't know. I like the idea of Kronstein just anticipating this moment where Grant is just like, go ahead and have some fun with him. It's fun.
Like all the times he wanted to talk smack while playing chess, but it's not allowed, so he just built it into this plan.
Yeah, so like I said, I've put the scene in already for the listeners to listen to, but yeah, Grant basically lays out the entire fucking plot that Spectre has come to fruition.
Yeah. So Grant taunts him, boasting Spectre has been pitting the Soviets against the British and the British against each other, and claims that Tanya thinks that she's doing it, doing everything for Mother Russia, when she is really working for Spectre. Uh-huh. Grant also mentions the film of Bond and Romanova at the hotel suite, saying that after both are killed, Grant will plant it in her handbag along with a forged blackmail letter, so it looks like it was a murder-suicide. Like, they've really got this thing thought out.
Now, what I do appreciate out of this scene is that Bond, I mean, much like in every other Bond movie, Bond looks royally fucked here.
Yeah.
But he actually, like, has to use his brain to get out of the situation. He's like, what the hell can I do? And he's like, well, let me get a cigarette. And Grant's like, yeah, right. You must be fucking kidding me. And he's like, well, I'll buy it from you. And Grant's like, well, you don't have any money. And he's like, I've got 50 gold sovereigns in this case. and so he makes Bond open the case, and, you know, Bond shows him the sovereigns, and, you know, he's like, is the other case the same way? And Bond's like, oh, let me check. And Grant's like, hang on a second, buddy. I may have been born on a day, but that day was not yesterday. I'll open the case myself. Thank you very much.
I mean, that's really that's clever, man. Like, that's really clever, man. Like, it's especially like these later James Bond movies, they don't show Bond thinking. Like, he's just a thug, right? Like,
or just he's just reacting. Or, like, right. He's just, you know,
it's all improv, right?
Or the solution to the problem just presents itself.
Yeah.
You know, like in Goldeneye, they're stuck in the helicopter that the missile's flying, gonna fly at it, and Bond's like, shit, what do I do? And he looks to his left. Oh, it's an eject button. Well, let me bash that with my head real quick.
A lot of Deus Ex Machina in some of those Bond movies, but this one is written very, very well. So as you said, Bond tricks Grant into opening the case, thereby releasing the tear gas booby trap and allowing Bond to attack him. Now, is Bond immune from tear gas? Because when they were stealing the Lecter, he had a mask on, and Tanya was like, oh no, we got to get out of here. And he was like, oh no, take this mask. It's just tear gas. Don't worry about it. And he gives her his mask, like, you know, I've been sprayed with so much tear gas. And then in this scene, the tear gas opens up in a train cabin. Like, this cabin is incredibly small. Like, there should be, these two dudes should be crying their eyes out, is what I'm saying. I think Bond is just totally immune to tear gas.
Maybe he built up an immunity by exposing himself to it in the event that he was forced with a test of wits with somebody.
Or maybe they do that on tear gas. Maybe they do that on MI6 Island instead of flamethrowers and just throw tear gas at you.
Oh, shit. Bond eventually manages to stab Grant with a knife that was hidden in the briefcase, and strangles Grant to death with his own watch wire. That's how I'm going to pronounce it. At dawn,
they had a couple of letters in common. It's all right.
At dawn, Bond and Tanya leave the train. They hijack Grant's getaway truck. They destroy an enemy helicopter, and they drive to a dock, eventually boarding a
powerboat. Oh, my goodness. Way to bury the lead on all this. Good Lord.
So, yeah.
So let's talk about the train cabin fight, because that's, you know, probably the scene that sticks out the most for most people. I love especially, like, sound designers and directors and editors that don't try to do too much and sometimes know when to back off and let the film speak for itself. The thing I love the most about the scene is that, first of all, the fight's awesome because it takes place inside this tiny ass train cabin, and I can't imagine how difficult that fight was to choreograph properly.
Right.
And then the fact that there's no music during the fight, like, all you hear is the sounds of the train and the atmosphere. There's not this, you know, huge soundtrack. It feels very gritty in that way.
It's pretty intense, man. Like you said, the fact that there's no music, the fact that it's in very, very close quarters, like, this fight and victory feels earned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it doesn't feel like, and it feels realistic. Like, you know, you got a guy with a magical briefcase, and you got a guy with a choking device and his watch, and yeah, but it feels very real, and it's pretty awesome, man.
Yeah, the only thing that I didn't like about the fight is the one part where after Bond kicks Grant in the face and he falls back onto the couch area, instead of, like, grabbing the gun or hitting him with something else, he just, like, pounces on him like he's one of the gypsy girls.
Well, see, that was the last thing that stuck in his mind.
Oh, goodness.
Now, the helicopter sequence. So, basically, they sent a helicopter after him. Helicopter's trying to throw grenades all over the place to try and run the truck off the road and kill Bond. North by Northwest much?
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, it was obviously an homage, but it was a very obvious homage.
Yeah, an homage is one thing, you know. Outright stealing is another. You know, I used to work at Kmart, and me and Jay homaged a couple of DVD players out of the store. You know what I mean? But it was pretty cool, man. It was pretty cool. Now, for some reason, for me, the after the train fight, everything else feels very rushed.
Oh, yeah. This whole third act moves at, like, breakneck pace.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
there's a lot of action that happens.
I feel like they could have just ended the movie after the train fight. Like, the main villain is done. They could have just showed up back at MI6. It's kind of how I feel. But they have a lot more action to go, which is still entertaining.
They have two giant explosions they have to get in.
Yeah.
Yeah, the helicopter stuff, all the helicopter stuff, all the hijacking that flower truck, and all the boat stuff didn't need to be here for me. This is what I mean by some of this movie could have been clipped, you know. I think that's why I kind of powered through most of that, because I'm like, this is like, she does this very stupid thing when they're on the boat, like, they're riding in the boat. The boat is moving, right? And then Tanya, she sticks her finger in her mouth, and then, you know, like, you check the wind, like, the direction of the wind. She sticks her finger in her mouth and holds her finger up. But you're riding in a boat.
It's, like, a motorboat, yeah.
All right, like, the wind is coming from the direction that you are riding in. Like, you're not, I don't know.
Before we get there, Kronstein and Kleb have to answer to number one.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. So number one is pissed, and he summons Kronstein and Kleb, and he reminds them that Spectre does not tolerate failure.
And Kleb's about to get it.
And Kleb is sweating bullets, and Kronstein is like, hey, sucks to be you.
You know what he says? You remember what he says? What
do you say?
Who is Bond compared to Kronstein?
Why? Man. Shut up. Like. So, what was the dude's name? Morzeny?
Yes.
Morzeny comes in, and Morzeny looks like someone, but I can't. Like, he looks like someone. Looks like. I don't know who he looks like, but he looks like maybe like a gigantic Jeffrey Tambor. Or something like that. He reminds me of someone, man. He reminds me of someone. And Morzeny comes in, and as number one is talking, Morzeny comes in like a coat that the chick from Scandal would wear because it's big and white and audacious. And he comes in and he prepares his kicking foot. With a blade that comes out of it, and it's tipped with poison, and he takes a very, very slow kick back, and he looks like he's about to kick Rosa, and all of a sudden, up, swerve! He kicks Kronstein, and then in 12 seconds, Kronstein dies, and number one is pissed because it took 12 seconds. To kill a man with a kick from a poison boot. And so, yeah, then we get more boat stuff, which...
Well, who did you two side with? Do you side with Kronstein? Was it his a problem with Grant, or was it a problem with his elaborate scheme?
Oh, Kronstein was a dick.
Yeah, you got to...
Oh, yeah, I'm not saying he didn't deserve it, but I kind of side with him a little that... Grant was partly at fault because I doubt he took into account that he Grant wanted to make off with 100 gold sovereigns.
I mean, you're right. Like, I'll give Kronstein credit. Like, look, my plan was all right. She hired the wrong guy, right? But at the same time, like, nah, man, you don't come into my office and be like, oh, who is Kronstein? Who is he compared to me? Like, man, fuck you. You're not above anybody. All right, you're number five. That means there are four more people ahead of you, buddy. You ain't above nobody. Get out of my face. I'd have just had him kick them both.
It seems like a bit of an overreaction that you get rid of your master planner when you didn't really lose anything. Like, oh, we didn't get to kill Bond and get this lectern that we could get at any moment. But I'm going to kill my master builder.
Right. The plan was sound, right? Like... You know, the execution was off, but my plan was excellent. Yeah, you're right. He kicked the wrong dude. Get out of here, Rosa. So, we get more boat stuff. Morzeny is following Bond. They're having a boat chase for some strange reason. And Morzeny nearly catches Bond, but... he sets his pursuers on fire with a signal flare and a bunch of barrels full of gasoline on a boat. So they go back to what, England?
Venice.
Venice, that's right, because they ride in a gondola. They go back to Venice and they check into a hotel. A maid comes in, and the maid is actually Rosa Klebb in disguise, and she attempts to steal the lector. She ends up getting the drop on James Bond and attempts to kill him with a gun and the poison tipped knife in her shoe. This is the scene you're talking about where Tanya comes in and, you know, it's time for her to make a decision.
Mm-hmm. She's got the gun. She can shoot one of them.
And right. So Bond and Klebb are in a fight and she can shoot one of them. And she's this terrible, terrible actress, instead of like just pointing the gun and having her face like express the emotion of who should I shoot, she's waving the gun back and forth. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe style. And I guess Rosa was Mo, so she shoots Rosa. And when Rosa is shot, she gets instant rigor mortis and completely stiffens as she gets shot and falls down to her death. Quite an end for this character. It was very memorable.
Did Kleb get shot? Because we don't see anything, but it kills her in like 30 seconds.
Right. Where does she get? Did she get shot? Maybe she got shot in the spine, and then her whole body was paralyzed, and it just fell. Because she like her and the way you see it in the movie, like it's not like Mortal Kombat where if you fail to put in a fatality, you get instant rigor mortis and you fall down. But her hand is literally up in the air, and she's got like a clawed hand, and it's just like, and then slides down. Like, it's so funny, man. So she gets shot. Next scene, we see James and Tanya riding in a gondola. James throws the sex tape into the water behind him and waves goodbye at it in a
weirdest looking hand wave ever.
He looks like he was like he had his hand like in a hand puppet, and it's just like, all right, bye bye. Hey, piggy, bye bye. Bye bye, sex tape. Like, it's very odd. And then we get credits, and then we get this old crooner singing this song. And that's your movie. And that's the best James Bond movie, guys.
It's got some stiff competition from some of the more modern ones. GoldenEye up there, Casino Royale's up there.
Absolutely.
But yes. I find very little fault with this film.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
it definitely has the best train fight.
Oh yeah, they would go back to that a couple of times later.
I'm thinking of one in particular that I'm not a fan of.
did it have someone's robot arm in it?
Yep. God damn it! I don't want to do that movie. But that's your movie, guys. So, if you're listening to this, that means you are a premium member. Thank you very, very much. You can listen to all our shows on the Nerdpocalypse Network. Tune into our main show, The Nerdpocalypse. Tune into Dense Pixels, where you'll hear myself and Brad. Tune into Tabletop for Two, where you'll hear Brad. Black on Black Cinema, where you'll hear myself. And We have a ton of content, and we're trying to do more for you this year. So, stay tuned and keep subscribing. Gentlemen, do you have anything you want to plug? Brad, we'll start with you.
I mean, you plugged all my stuff, so there you go.
James.
But I got one other comment about the movie.
Oh, sure.
A small part of me wishes that Grant would have lived at the end and somehow been tracked down in The Spy Who Loved Me and killed by Jaws, just so Robert Shaw would be killed by Jaws twice.
Oh, man. Oh shit. That's funny,
I did not see that coming.
But yeah, other than that, I'm writing some reviews for a website called channelsuperhero.com. I wrote for the stop motion show Super Mansion, and I'm getting ready to start writing for season 2 of Agent Carter this week. So,
oh wow, that's amazing! All right, pretty excellent. Cool. So, again, thank you everyone for listening. And the men with the golden tongues will return in Goldfinger.
I've traveled the world.
James, behave yourself. We are being filmed.
Oh, not again. He was right, you know.
What is it?
I'll show you.
Faces and smile for a moment, but oh. haunted me so. Still my tongue tied, young pride would not let my love for you show. In case you'd say no, to Russia I flew, but there and then I suddenly knew you'd care. To you from Russia.